Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mindshifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mindshifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. I'm actually in the presence of Michael today, first time in about 3 or 4 weeks, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, July the 17th, 2014. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And it's an honor and a privilege, once again, to have each of you with us that chooses to join in learning and bringing forward into the world this ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness. Our task is simple. If you hold a newborn child, you know what human life is. And we're looking to create the space for the removal of everything that is unlike human life from planet Earth. And the first century Aramaic word for removal is forgiveness. Of course, the idea has been turned around on the planet, we've discovered, where in the Greek culture, the forgiveness process kind of goes like this. You did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for what's going on inside of me. And, of course, if it's going on inside of you, it's yours. It does not belong to the world. If you blame the world and then you try to forgive the world, you've done nothing to change what's going on inside of you. When you think forgiveness, think removal. That is, to remove from your structure those energies, those patterns, the pain, the fear, the grief, the rage, the sadness, the hatred, the vengeance of 1,000 generations is what true forgiveness is about. And so we want to enter into how to remove what does not belong. But, of course, if you can't see that what does not belong is yours, you can't remove it. Because if you think it's Charlie or Bill or Mary that did it, then whatever's inside of you, you have to hide from yourself. So what needs to be removed for most people has been hidden. And they have no idea how to uncover the hidden part of their mind that literally makes them crazy, that is, that leads them into the hostilities and fears of the world. And so we're here to support that process, and our calling number is 646-200-4169. We would love to hear your questions, your thoughts, your answers, your ideas. Do you need Dr. Tim with us today? Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see what he's got on his mind. Anything to share with us, Tim?
Busy day. It's one of the thoughts I had was to ask you how the intensive is going, how the Food, Fun, Forgiveness, and Work project is going, because we haven't heard
really
much about
completed. It has completed. We actually finished yesterday morning with a still point breathing workshop with the group, a still point breathing session, and then I headed up here and picked Jimmy up at the airport last night, so we're now in Springfield. I just came back from the farmer's market with a van full of food, and we're going to go out and do errands this afternoon, and then tomorrow folks come into the airport, we'll pick them up and head back to Heartland, and tomorrow evening starts codependence to interdependence. So all things are moving forward.
It's sounds delightful.
It is. It is. There's a really sweet space developing. Heartland is looking better than ever. Everything is coming together. There's been lots of hard work done on just getting the facility ready through this 10-day Food Fund Forgiveness and Move project. And so anybody that might want to participate in that next year might want to make some plans. It's a kind of an economy program where during the day we do work projects on the property, and in the evening we do workshops, and Saturday we do still point breathing. And we decided as a group to, instead of covering a different topic, to add in another still point breathing session, which we did yesterday morning. So we got two still point sessions in this this particular 10-day. So it was great.
Well, that's it's interesting. I haven't done a lot of still point breathing lately, and just this past week I had another hidden post-traumatic stress from 9/11 show up in my caseload. And there's just so much of that. If you consider that I'm just one therapist and there are 9 different people in the past 13 years who've shown up, and then we've discovered through the course of our work that the root of the energies they're holding, which is still disrupting and redirecting their lives, came from what they downloaded during the 9/11 attacks and the events of the weeks and months after that. It's pretty remarkable to see how much there is out there. And as it came to pass, the person uncovered another real powerful piece, and I said, okay, well, why don't you come on Thursday night and we'll do a breathing session. So I'm doing the first breathing session in my office that I've done in quite a while, and you guys did two in your intensive. So the breath work is up.
That's certainly powerful, and I think that the really deeply impacted people from the 9/11 scenario are going to start showing up on another level in a couple of years, and they're the ones that were 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 at the time 9/11 happened, and the younger ones especially didn't have the brain cells to recognize that, you know, when they showed these close-ups with all this high-energy fear going on and people jumping out of windows, when children saw this, the younger children saw this day after day, 3, 4, 5 times a day, I don't think they had the comprehension that it was all the same event. To them, it was just happening over and over and over, and the impact of that, I don't know what it's going to look like when it starts to express, or a lot of it probably is what's expressing in the young people and the violence that's going on in the culture, but it's definitely a major issue to be addressed in the culture.
Yeah, it's the thing that's really of interest to me is how deeply it's hidden, and how sometimes people talk about it directly and say, oh yeah, I remember that, but you know, I don't have any issues with that. I worked through that, or that's not the issue here. And it's come up probably 5 of the 9 times it's come up in my caseload. It's been where the marriage relationship is disintegrating.
Right.
And people are absolutely unaware that it began disintegrating after 9/11. And there's this fear of loss, fear of losing intimacy. So because I'm afraid I might lose you, I'm not going to let myself get that close to you. And then over time, we're drifting farther and farther apart in the relationship. It must be her fault, or it must be his fault.
Right.
And the change that can happen when people quit looking outside of themselves and look inside to their own fears and their own anxieties and literally apply the tool like forgiveness and dismantle it, and the process reverses. So that's pretty much top of thought for me today. It's top of mind is a lot of different people with post-traumatic stress from various issues, and the breath session I'm going to be doing tonight, and that's where my head is.
Any more to share on perhaps some of the way the mind is processing this to turn it into relationship conflict? Any more that you can say about that?
Well, in three different cases that come right to mind, the people came in to see me because they were having upsets in their relationship. Two of them, the problems seemed to be around how they parented their children, and one of them, it was directly a relationship issue. Either she can't trust him or he can't trust her. And for all three of them that are at the top of my mind right now, as we began to work, and there was a lot of pushback when I would ask them about where this began and what year and what was going on, and I would try to get them to take a look at how there might be some connection to the 9/11 tragedy and the trauma and what each of them did in response to that. There was tremendous pushback. You know, in the early years, people thought I was just fishing and sensationalizing something. But for all three of these cases, one or the other partner was traveling on that day in or around New York, and the other one was stuck wondering, are they involved? Will I see them again? And, of course, the phones were down. So the trauma to the relationship for going, in one case it was several days before there was any connection that could be made to verify that the person was alive. And that fear and that trauma and that belief that they'd lost their partner and the sadness from that, and the person never processed it and never dealt with the grief. And in the other cases, one case, there was a person who thought because their partner wasn't responding that she was having an affair. And the energy that she downloaded and the belief she had around that was driving a wedge between them in their relationship. And when they started to tap into the fear, the sadness, the belief that they'd lost somebody, and the thought about how do I go on raising these kids without my partner and dismantling that, then it got easier and easier for them to reconnect to their partner. And I'm just left wondering, you know, how many people never made that connection, never did the work to process the grief or dismantle the fear, and ended up just divorcing. I think it's a lot.
Definitely one of those cases where we need to step into the willingness to look into the things going on in our society that most people don't want to look at and deal with because they have such a powerful impact. And most often that impact is totally, completely unconscious. You know, what comes to mind is the file folder effect. And for those who are listening, if you're not familiar with that from this work, basically what the file folder effect says is that when brain cells fire together, they wire together. And I use an example of, you know, don't think about a purple alligator. And we know you all have a file in your mind on purple and a file on alligator. If you've never heard this example before, then they've probably never been hooked together. And if I started tomorrow's radio show out and said, don't think about a purple, what would fire in the mind? Alligator. And so often the things that are firing from the culture, and especially if there's conflict, which certainly if a partner wasn't physically present and was in New York, would tend to wire into that file on their partner, then forevermore when one's in their partner's presence, if they never forgive that energetic dynamic, every time you're in their partner's presence, all of that resonates, all of that pain, all of that turmoil. And people unknowingly hook their fear, their rage, their guilt, their hate, their vengeance into their brain's image of someone without even realizing it, just because those two things are present in the same space. And to be able to look into those things, to courageously and honestly look and change that dynamic and to move into the space of purposely, consciously wiring wonderful things into your brain's image of your partner. You know, if there's been a conflict, to breathe, to let loose, to forgive that conflict, and then purposely tie into how much you cherish and what the relationship is really about and what the connection is really about, and all of that can reinforce and help this carbon-based memory system to move us in the direction of more caring and more connectedness rather than hooking everything traumatic in and wondering why there's distance. So it's certainly a dynamic to be consciously looked at, and the willingness to look at everything that's going on in the culture and go ahead.
The thing that is resonated for me when you say that is that it comes up at an unconscious level, and I become aware of the sensations or the energy of anger or the fear or the discomfort without any conscious connection to what's causing that within me. And if that's happening when I have been conditioned to look outside of myself every time there's an upset, then I instantly go on a wild goose chase looking for the cause of my upset. And that's why these tools...
Which, of course, must be you.
Pardon me?
Which, of course, must be you.
Yeah, you.
Everybody's
you,
that.
You,
whoever they're
everybody but me.
Must be the person they follow.
I know who the problem is, and it's always the same person. It's them. And them means anybody outside of me and not me.
Right.
And so that's why the tools, you know, from the whyagain.org and your intensives, this is, you know, the core of them. I keep telling people, in our first session, we'll start to talk about what's the source of what I'm feeling inside of me. It's always what's inside of me. And if they can master that one piece, and that, I believe, you know, especially for those of us who've had it conditioned into us for decades, that's not an overnight process to master that, to undo that conditioning. But if I master that, then when I have this anger or fear or sadness energy resonated in me, I look inside. Now I have a chance at resolution because I'm looking at where the cause actually lies. And if on top of that I've got some of these tools like the reality management and stress management worksheet and the mind shifter and the breath work, there's no limit to how much I can move forward and clear away any obstacles to me seeing myself as the true in nature of love, as that energy of love, and being able to see others as that true nature and energy of love. But if I'm operating from the conditioning that says the cause of what I'm feeling is outside of me, I'm instantly thrown into the prison.
Internal prison.
Yeah. Yeah, one of my own making.
And then my response will tend to be, and, you know, because my mind shows it to me differently when I do it to someone else than when they do it to me, I don't see what I'm doing. But when the stress is up and the chips are down, invariably, and nobody believes this until they really fall deeply in love with truth and say, let me really look honestly. But, you know, they'll watch their power person do something, but they do not believe in a million years that that's what they do. And it is precisely what they do when the stress is up and the chips are down. But because their mind labels it differently, you know, when the power person did it to us, we saw it as one thing, but then when that habit, when that stress management device is used in the other direction, it's not called, you know, if the power person did it to us, it was a put down, it was abuse, it was criticism, it was, you know, disapproval, whatever it is. But when we turn that around, because the mind labels exactly the same behavior as, well, this is just protecting me, this is just taking care of myself, then because I label it, my reality something different, I do what my power person did when under stress and don't even know I'm doing it. It becomes invisible. In fact, Jane was sharing with me yesterday, someone that she had talked with recently, and the bottom line after doing quite a bit of work between this couple was the woman in this couple, her words to her husband were, "You mean I do that to you? I've done that to you? You want to say a little more about that? It's pretty powerful."
I had actually been going through a struggle, and he did the Love Dare, which, if you're not familiar with that, you can just look it up on the internet. It went along with a movie called Fireproof, but in the movie, and it was very similar to what was going on. I'm picking up myself in that.
Let me interrupt, Jeannie.
Yes.
There's something that's such a strong echo, I can't really comprehend what you're saying.
Okay, yeah, I just had Michael mute his phone. His phone was, both of our phones are on, so it was picking me up, and there's a delay.
All right, you have to start over for me to hear you.
Okay, sure. So the Love Dare goes along with a movie called Fireproof, if you've not seen it. It's very powerful. It's an older movie, and it was kind of in the independent theaters more than the mainstream, but in the movie, the guy was a fireman, and, of course, he saved people from fires and all that, but he couldn't save his own marriage. It was falling apart. And somebody that he worked with, it was actually his father, gave him a book, and it was called The Love Dare, and it was for 40 days, and you had to follow the book, and it told you different things to do, you know, like it might be to start off with something simple like make her, you know, cup of coffee or a cup of tea or whatever and have it ready for her, or take her breakfast in bed or whatever. And then it progressively got a little more detailed, you know, whether it was leaving her flowers or whatever. And so there was something different to do every day for 40 days, just directing love towards this person and some means of showing that appreciation. And then it had a place in the book to write down what you did and what their reaction was, and you know, what it brought up, and all of these things. And, of course, in the movie, they got almost to the very end of it before anything ever shifted. And, you know, she would do things like he'd have her cup of coffee, and she'd walk by and say, "I don't have time this morning." You know, or he'd fix her a meal, and she'd come in from work and say, "You know, I'm not hungry," and just go on up to her room. And all of the things that it brought up for him, well, almost that exact same thing happened to someone that was in my family. We were actually talking about it during the 4th of July family reunion. And they were on the verge of getting a divorce, and somebody that he worked with told him about it and gave him the book, and he proceeded to do it. And, of course, you don't tell the other person, "Hey, I'm doing this Love Dare thing." You just do it. And without, you know, any real expectation, and you write down what transpires. And so he did that, and at the end of 40 days it still had not gone anywhere, and he actually gave his spouse the book to read what he was doing, and she wouldn't read it. So he took the book back, and he went on for another 25 days. So he did a total of 65 days, and he went into work, and it was like, "This isn't working, you know, I quit." And the guy gave him a prayer or a chant or something. He said, "You go home and you walk around your house three times saying this and then walk in the door." And he said, "If there is still no reaction whatsoever, then, you know, I'll let you go. You go ahead and get your divorce or do whatever." He said, "But, you know, I think that you all are worth fighting for." That was his words. And so he thought, you know, "My neighbors are really going to think I'm crazy." But he did it. He went home and he marched around his house three times doing this prayer. And then he walked in the door, and he said he didn't know whether she saw him or not walking around the house. But when he walked in the door, she was standing there with tears running down her face, and she had been reading the book. And she looked at him and she said, "Did I really do this to you? Did I act like this to you with all that you were doing?" And he said, "Yes." And they both just broke down, and their marriage has not been the same since. It's just been phenomenal. But She was in total denial of what she was doing towards him. She was so wrapped up in her own pain about what was going on for them that she didn't realize her part in the whole situation and how she was responding back to him when he was trying. And so it was real powerful to hear him talk about that and how they had just totally done a switch.
That's powerful. I think we do it all the time.
I think Michael has lost his connection. Yeah, it's, and one of the things that we were talking about in the chat room, you know, you were referring to post-traumatic stress, and there's a lot of post-traumatic stress, not just, you know, in military or 9/11 or whatever. Anybody who has experienced, say, rape or robbery or being in a terrible accident or something.
Birth.
Yeah. That
birth
there
in this culture is a root for post-traumatic stress. The way most children are brought into the world is crazy. And I was just talking to someone recently, or actually maybe it was someone called into the show and was saying that in Brazil they have something like an 80% C-section rate, and included in the C-section, it's like just so popular because the, you know, the look of the body is the whole thing in that culture, that 80% of women get C-sections, and part of the C-section is a tummy tuck. So they're looking great after having the baby, and the body doesn't stretch, doesn't go through the natural process. I mean, 80% of babies born in that culture, post-traumatic stress. It's like the culture is bizarre.
But what I was sharing in the chat room is that you were talking about blocking out and not realizing. And even in those other situations, you know, people block out things that happen to them that are traumatic like that, actually leave their body so that they don't have to experience what's going on or feel it. And so when they have these flashbacks, it's because, you know, that is still there in the memory, even though they've kind of blocked it out. And until they can become aware, you know, it's like a certain situation happens and the way of surviving it is to, say, just block out or leave your body, disassociate, yes. And so then when there's a trigger, it's unconscious. I mean, it might just be somebody walking past you that is familiar or similar to someone that was involved in the past incident. And so it's an unconscious thing that it triggers, and it's like, oh, and so you block out again, or you just disassociate from it again. And you're not even aware that you're doing it. And so until you can bring that to awareness and become aware of, you know, okay, this is what I'm doing and what just happened to trigger it, you can't change it because it's just automatic. And, you know, just like in the instance of the couple that I was talking about, she was just on automatic behavior to try to survive what she saw as their demise and couldn't even see beyond, you know, that there was something else happening because she was just on automatic living or existing.
And the key in that, as I see it, is to recognize that it's a power person pattern. And if you look at that particular dynamic, what you were sharing was this young lady's power person had, at a very young age, totally and completely kicked her out of his life, her father. And, you know, fortunately, Jeannie was able to see that dynamic and help to heal that rift. But here was this young lady having experienced that power person dynamic and just basically left relationship with her husband over, you know, a power person dynamic. And it's just, it's so rampant, and there is so much suffering in the culture as a result of it. And that movie Fireproof, if you haven't seen it, you know, folks, you know, jump on Amazon. I think you can buy it for $5 and watch it, or I've seen it in you know, in Walmart, and there, you know, the bin. Yeah, there's a religious component to it, but the principle is there, and the religious component, you know, the person who shares it with the man in the film is his father, and the young man goes through the whole thing, and they finally open the space up, and all the while the young man is thinking that it was his mother that had to do it with the father. You know. And at the end of the film, the father reveals, no, I was the one. You know, she did the 40 days for me. And it was a big shock to the son to see that had gone on in his family system. He had no awareness of it. But it's a powerful film. And for those who've got an itch about religion, just let the itch go. The principles are there. It's powerful. And if you haven't got an itch about religion, you just reinforce the understanding and you know, watching for the principles of the active presence of love being what the owns really about. And so it's very powerful. And you might pick up the book, and you know, if you're having challenges in your relationship, you know, a couple of years ago we were in South Florida, and Jeannie had a gentleman who came to the Healing Through Relationships workshop and shared with her after the workshop that you know, it was too late. His marriage was already broken, and they were down the tubes. And Jeannie handed him the commitment and said, "Well, here, just take this. It's kind of like a love dare. Take this and read it to her every day." And the guy called her back a couple of weeks later and said, "You're not going to believe this. I thought our marriage was over. We were finished. There was too much water under the bridge." And he said, "I've been reading this to her every day, and it's like we're on our second honeymoon. We're just having a blast together, and there's no conversation about divorce, and we remember who we are and why we got into a relationship." And Jeannie said, "Well, that's really cool. Does she read it back to you when you read it?" And he kind of stared. He said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, when you read it to him, does he read it back to you?" And the guy said, "She doesn't know I'm doing this. She doesn't know I'm reading this." So very much ties in with the love dare. We've seen several cases where someone just taking that commitment and silently using it has made major shifts in relationships. So it's interesting how this whole energy dynamic called life works, and what it takes to heal ourselves and to open the space for healing for those around us. And, of course, it's easy for us to think that it's all somebody else's fault and somebody else's work until we get really, truly honest with ourselves and look at our own internal dynamics. It's much more of a challenge to heal, for sure. That beatitude from the Aramaic Beatitudes that the classic translation from the Greek says, "Blessed are they mourning their wrongs, for they will be comforted." In Aramaic, what that beatitude says is that a latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who love truth, who look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society, for you will be cured of mental stress. It's just so monumental. And healing happens. Yay. Anything else to share, Dr. Zinn, before we check in on phone lines, chat room?
No, I think I would just echo what you just said and what Jeannie told in her story and how powerful it is, and remind us that we're all doing that all the time. And the upset we feel is what we're creating, and if we don't know how we're doing it, then we can apply these tools to uncover the unconscious dynamics and dismantle them.
For sure. For sure. Well, that is what we're here to support, and our calling number is 646-200-4169. If you have a thought or a question for us, we'd be delighted to hear from you. If you're in the phone queue and you push one, that'll put your hand up. Do we have anything happening in the chat room to be aware of, or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
There are no questions or anything. I would just add that the reality management worksheet that we have is what will bring it from the unconscious to the conscious so that it can be changed. So if you press 1, nobody has their hand up, you'd be first in line with no waiting.
And when Jeannie talks about the reality management worksheet, we're talking about the first century Aramaic forgiveness process. And maybe it would be good to clarify the difference between dissociation and disassociation, because we have used both of those words. And when one goes into denial, and is, I think or speak as though somebody outside of me, this is our definition of denial, if somebody outside of me is the cause of something inside of me, then I dissociate. That is, the cause that's in me, in order to really believe that the cause is outside of me, the cause within me, I have to hide from myself. So that's dissociation. Then what Jean was talking about earlier, when one goes into a very traumatic situation, oftentimes they disassociate. And that disassociation is when they cut themselves off from even the presence of being in their bodies, that they actually leave. I can actually remember my mom and I sharing, and we were processing a time when something traumatic happened to her, and she shared with me, and, you know, she just goes back into the 20s, and she shared with me how she found herself when there was a stress, a fight going on with her brother, and her brother was hitting her, and she was up in the corner of the room on the ceiling watching her brother hit her. She had disassociated from her own body. And so that's a different thing than dissociation. Do you have any thoughts to share on that, Dr. Kim?
Well, only that it does get confusing for people. I think you've handled it pretty well. It's the disassociation is literally creating a perception that I'm outside of my body, whereas the dissociating you're talking about in the worksheet process is I'm mentally denying the presence of some thought or energy within me, but I still feel like I'm here in my body and I feel like I know what's going on. In the disassociation state, I literally feel like I'm out of my body, or I'm not here at all, I've blacked out. And I might, in a strong disassociation process, I might lose awareness of minutes, hours, or even days. And yet the people around me saw me, they interacted with me, they watched me do things, and I've got no memory of it because I completely cut myself off from my awareness of being who I was physically.
All right. Good input. Well, Jeannie tells me that we've got a hand up. Jeannie? 417, you're on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Magda calling from down the road a piece.
Hey there, young lady. Delighted to hear your voice. I'm looking forward to seeing the scenarios that you come up with for support and assistance in our codependency interdependence workshop starting Friday. It's going to be fun.
Ha! I'm excited that we're going to be starting tomorrow. Yes, I'll send those to you later today, okay? And you can look them over and see what you want to use.
Fabulous. Thank you for that support. I love having the genius of all the awesome people that we get to play with at this work, having input and giving us support. Thank you.
It's fun. You're welcome. I'm calling to check something with you, share what's been happening with me and check and see if my take on it is skewed or on. I have been known in my life, in a lot of my life, to want to distract my brain, my mind, from being able to become aware of the things you guys were just talking about, the stuff that's on the subconscious level. And when I use the worksheet, Jeannie, you are right on. It brings that stuff up. And there are other tools that do that as well that I like so much. However, what I've been experiencing lately is, let me just say that my distraction is usually auditory. I will turn on public radio so I can hear all of the very, very important reports that they're making from all around the world and so forth and so on. And so what I've been experiencing lately when I'm working in the garden is quiet. And no incoming messages from anywhere. So what has been happening is that I've had certain memories come up that, interestingly, do not seem traumatic at all. And so I've very much discounted needing to do any work around those memories. However, I have a question about this, a sneaking suspicion that I do need to pursue some worksheets and other tools, because some of the same memories come up again and again. And
right.
Noticing that, I'm thinking, ooh, there's a message here. So, and interesting, too, is that I haven't done anything with those memories. So I guess my
What is the quality of the memories that you're referring to?
I experienced just remembering an instant, and I have no emotion attached to it that I'm aware of, and I'll say that, you know, in quotation marks. And that's probably why I've been resisting. I'm sorry?
What is the incident you're talking about? What kind of incident? Can you give me an example?
There are a number of them that are repetitive. One of them is from my childhood when, I don't know, maybe I was 4 years old, five, six, something like that. I remember my mother consoling me. It was a summer day, and the other kids didn't want to play with me. I don't remember that part of it, what happened with that. But I remember that I was upset. Now, that's a memory of having been upset. Huh, interesting. I just said there wasn't any upset, didn't I?
Good. And writing it perfect.
I didn't understand that.
What it sounds like is that, and this may be an example of what we were talking about, of disassociation, that you would cut yourself off from it totally, though the memory is there. And so when the memories come, because you perhaps disassociated at that time, there's no feeling attached. It's totally unconscious. And it sounds like you just took a step in by opening the space. And, you know, this is one of the beauties of support, that African proverb is, if you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. That in the space of empowerment, Jeannie holding the space, Dr. Tim, Julie's probably on the phone, Rex, Michelle, myself, that all of a sudden you're able to, and together we're able to access more than we would if we were standing on our own. And so it sounds like there are places where you cut yourself off from awareness of what the feelings and what the emotions are. But I would suspect that the reason they're especially repeatedly coming forward is because they're begging to be dealt with.
Yeah, that was my take on it as well. Okay, so why did I need you to confirm that for me? I know why. Well, it also, yes, that, and thank you. And it also gave me a reason to put off actually doing any work around those issues. So my resistance is pretty high is what I'm feeling right now. It has been very high. And I was not aware of that before talking about it like this. So, yeah, so talking to you about it was an excuse to put it off. Because I've been thinking about calling in and asking this question for probably a month. And there's always something more important going on this show, so I haven't done it.
Never anything more important than what's up for any one of us at the moment that it's up. And two things I would suggest doing. One, of course, would be to do some worksheets around it. But let's imagine, and I know you've done a lot of support with people, if you had someone who fed back to you any one of those scenarios, what would be the mind shifter that you would give them to bring it closer to the surface? And so you might want to, so in that case, for instance, you might look at a mind shifter of, it's safe and healing for me to look at what was happening when my mother felt a need to console me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you might, in each of those memories that's coming forward, aside from worksheets, you might create a mind shifter around it to just resonate that and get that moving to get it to the surface,
yeah.
Because we know that if it remains unconscious, that's that Aramaic definition of the unconscious mind being control, controlling perception and behavior, and of course that makes it much more difficult to function consciously.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, I like that idea very, very much. You know, I like mind shifters a lot, so that was a good one to plug in there. And I can actually feel a shift in my energy internally right now, that it's a loosening. I'm experiencing a loosening without even going to start the mind shifter yet. So that's right on. Good.
Cool. And, you know,
okay.
A lot of times, we want to hide those things because we think there's something so terrible there that it would devastate us. And the truth is, if there's devastation there, the devastation has already been done. What you can do when you look at it is undo the devastation. Come out the other side and not have to carry that as an unconscious load. To me, that's the beauty of the process.
Right, right. Good reminder. Right. I made it through. So as it went in, I'll make it through as it comes out, and when I get to the other side, I won't have to carry it anymore. Yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, that was great. Thank you. So I will send that information on to you for your perusal, and look forward to seeing you and everybody else tomorrow as we start the new workshop. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
We appreciate you.
Blessings to you. Thank you, and you as well. And welcome back, Jeannie.
Thank you. And Michelle said she just sent you a text that, yes, she's here holding the space and that was awesome.
Ah, cool. Yeah, it is wonderful to have this community and to have this show. So I'm my gratitude to everyone who is holding the space. Okay, well, I will sign off and let somebody else enjoy the support that you're offering. Okay? Bye-bye.
All right.
Blessings,
blessings
everyone.
Blessings.
Blessings.
Okay.
Area code 630, you're on the air. Give us the name. Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Mark. Giving a call from Chicago.
Hey, there, sir.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. I am well.
Awesome. Awesome. Hello, everybody. I was calling because the conversation on dissociation was something that's near and dear to my heart. I've been a master dissociator and have done that extremely well. And so I thought I could add something to it. But then as Magda was talking, I thought, you know what? I could really use some support on something, too. So I'm going to go with the support piece today. So Tim, in all of his wisdom the other day, asked me a question that was just a really good, poignant question, and it was about some medication that I was taking. And I was feeling kind of drowsy on the medication, and he said, what would it be like if you had 20% more energy, meaning not as drowsy as I was? And instantly what came to my mind was, oh, well, then I couldn't manipulate my wife into thinking that I was too drowsy, so I shouldn't be on the medication and I should go off of it. And it shocked me when I heard it. And it was just such a great question to get to kind of what I call the bottom of it. And
right.
Then he suggested that I take a broader view of it and say, well, why would I be interested or what value comes to me when I'm in mania, because that's the reason that I'm on the medication, is to keep balance and not go into the mania piece of things. And I've been struggling with that, and I've kind of been looking for what would be an additional question, perhaps, kind of like that one that you had suggested, Tim, about what if I had 20% more energy. And I've been kind of playing a mind game with this mania thing, because in my head I think I don't need the medication. There's another way to do it. I really believe in my heart of hearts that this can be managed a different way. But yet everybody around me seems to have fear and anxiety that if I did go off the medication that I'd go back into that manic episode, and it's possible that, well, that I would, because that seems to be the recurring pattern. So I'm trying to get to what's the underlying or the underpinning piece of it, and I know there might be lots of it, but if you had an insight or a question, either Tim or Michael or anybody, I would love, love, love to hear it.
One of the things that immediately comes to mind right toward the beginning of what you were saying is that you might want to do some worksheets around feeling the need to manipulate your wife and why that might be. And then to look at if obviously that happens, that comes to your mind to do when you're in a stressed out place. The stress is up in the chips, you know. So by definition, what we know is that's a power person dynamic. So looking into how or why or what went on around the power person manipulating you might be a place where some of that manic energy comes from in response to being manipulated. If that's the one that comes up and, you know, wanting to pass that on, then to look at the dynamic with the power person who manipulated you. Was there any of that when you were a kid?
Yeah. My mother was a master at getting us to do what she wanted us to do, or what she wanted. Yeah. I said that right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was sort of a feeling of emotional manipulation in that, you know, if we didn't do what mom wanted, she'd kind of have her own tools. And if we still didn't do what mom wanted, then dad would come home and he would use more of a blunt force mechanism to get us to do what mom wanted us to do in the first place.
One of the manipulations by mom was, I'll threaten you with blunt force, dad. And you know, that's such a great, I mean, I've worked with so many people over the years who, wives, who said, yeah, well, you know, I just stayed out of the middle of the trouble with my children. I just told them when their father got home. And it's like, what a thing to do to a father. What a role to cast a father in. Oh, we'll have the bad guy take care of you when he gets home. Is an awful message to give a child, I think, and probably a good worksheet topic for a lot of people to do who were in that family situation. But
well, hers was more of a passive-aggressive threat.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a wait till your father gets home. It was more, you know, it was more of a gentle, like, if I didn't do what mom wanted me to do, she'd express disappointment. And I would often just do what she wanted me to do so that I could get approval. And in the case that it still didn't work, where the disappointment piece didn't work with me, then dad would come home and I don't know if they talked or what their conversation was, but he would just kind of use the blunt force. It wasn't a threat. It would be actually kind of a surprise out of nowhere, apparently.
So you might look at the conflict between, I knew what was coming, but it was a surprise. And what kind of energy state would that put you in? What kind of energy state would that resonate, would you go into when that occurred?
Oh, well, a lot of guilt about, it's almost like self-guilt or shame that I knew better. And I feel stupid and like an idiot.
Wow.
For not paying attention to the signs of what was coming. I should have known better.
So guilt, blame, idiot sound like three really good worksheets to do. I think we could put you in about any category but idiot, Mark. But you'd certainly want to be resolving those thoughts about yourself. because I could easily recognize or I could easily see that if what was resonating under the surface was idiot, that I might go into an altered state to try to, you know, hide that, prevent that from appearing, and look better than that. And that might be an energetic contribution to that, what's been called mania. Talking with your breath right now.
I'm holding it as I write a note. I'm doing a really good job of holding my breath.
Yeah, so I breathe into that and just gently allow that to open. That's big stuff.
Yeah, that whole conversation brings up a lot of energy, a lot of emotion.
Well, you know, it's kind of unfortunate in so many circumstances because parents don't know how to discipline their children. Discipline meaning coming from the root disciple, which means properly taught, don't know how to properly teach them, so they manipulate them. They beat them into submission, whether it's verbally, emotionally, or even just with that, oh, look how hurt I am. That's a way of forcing a child into a behavior. And to force a child into the right behavior with that kind of energy leads to a child who lives their lives in propitiation, which is kind of not a very common word, but T.S. Eliot defines the word beautifully with a short poem that he has, and he said, "'Tis the highest treason to do the right thing for the wrong reason." And when parents force the children to do something because the parent doesn't know the how and why of it, they just know we have to get this result, then the child who's manipulated or terrorized into it 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, they're still doing the right thing, but what's under the surface is that terror and that pain. And so every time they do the right thing, they're creating more of a disease process in their bodies by doing the right thing. The energy that is underneath it, the energy that was absorbed by the power person, taken on genetically usually, and then absorbed from the power person, is not the kind of energy that is health and wholeness and leads to wholesomeness. And so to look at every time in your life when you're doing the right thing for the wrong reason and let go of the energy that underlies it and study and understand principles so that you do the right thing for the right reason. Why do I want to do this? Because this is what works in this energy system called life. And if I do it because somebody terrorized me into it, then the underlying energy of my behavior is terror, and that's a disease energy. And I could certainly easily imagine that mania would be a reaction to any kind of energy. And so forgiving and removing that might be where your resolution lies. And we're down to the last minute or so, unfortunately. I wish we'd started this conversation early in the show, but maybe we could pick it up tomorrow and continue the conversation. Although tomorrow is, but actually Dale Allen Hoffman is not going to be with us tomorrow. He's out somewhere where he doesn't have cell service. You know, Mark, we could continue this conversation. I think it's a really productive one. And in the meantime,
I'll
just...
I'll do some worksheets on it tonight and give you a call back tomorrow.
Awesome. Look forward to it. We appreciate you and everybody who takes part in this community. It's awesome, and we hold the space. And give the world the best gift you can. Give it the best year yet of your eternal life. Bring the show tomorrow. You're ready to take your work to the next level. Intensive starts Friday, our whole series. Check the website. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.y.com.